Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court strike.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win.
James puts up the three.
Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. With 0.5 of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And yesterday, we finally got that Peyton Watson trade. We're going to talk about that in tomorrow's pod. But today, wanted to get back to the talk on the floor. I miss it so badly after all of the ownership drama. And to help us out with all of that, we've got someone who I think is amongst the very best in the world at understanding where the league is, where it's been, and where it's going in terms of the on-court trends of that. Welcome back to the show, Iztok Franco. How you doing, Iztok?
Hi, guys. Hi, I'm doing great. Enjoying my summer, so thanks for having me back. And great to talk to you both.
It's fantastic. Right as our guys are touching down in Slovenia, I know you're not there right now, but we'll talk about that maybe for a couple minutes at the end. But what I really wanted to talk to you about was this idea. When I brought this idea up to you of sort of the trends of the NBA, I mentioned this a few pods ago about how this summer the Lakers wanted to sort of get more aligned with industry standards. And when I brought that idea to you, your response was that this is now more than ever a motor league. And so I wanted to ask you, what do you mean by that? And what are the components of that?
My response was sending you 1,000 charts.
I love it. It's why you're one of the best.
I have a reunion circle of some people who watch the league from, let's say, different angles that most people do. And I really love that, just picking brains. I've heard this expression, motor league, a couple of times. And I think it's something that we talk about. I think a lot of us, perception of last year's team was there wasn't a lot of high motor players on that team, on the Lakers team. And last summer, during the playoffs, I started one for my Substack, one series of articles that I named NBA Trends. And I realized in that article, through the data, as we were watching, if you remember last year playoffs, OKC, Indiana, it was such a fast-paced series. I think OKC throughout the playoffs last year, they put so much pressure on ball throughout the full court. Houston was another team. Also the Wolves, I think, at times. And this year, the Spurs joined the club. So last year, I started with this and I saw it in the data. I think some of the things, the speed of the game we are seeing on the floor with the pace increasing. But there were some other things that we saw, which I put, let's say, under the geometry of the court umbrella. So we know the three-point line is further out and the three-point shot, the data is getting out further and further, so closeout distances are longer. Also, average peak, where the peaks are set away from the hoop distance, is getting further away from the rim. Again, distance to cover on defense, it's much further. And then some other data that we saw on ball pressure, so how many teams are pressing the ball. This is something that I saw in data last year. And then before this pod, when we were talking about Lakers transformation, I checked the data again, and I just saw these trends even increasing, most of them. This year, we saw, for example, the Blazers throughout the year. They were one team that adopted really this ball pressure style, the Pistons. So we have, I think, especially in the regular season, we have a lot of young teams that go full throttle. And we saw the Lakers, how much they struggled last season against this team. So this is some of the data that I saw. And I think the data confirms this motor argument, although motor, when it comes to players, and we can talk about that as well, is sometimes a little bit more difficult to quantify in data.
These ideas just fascinate me, and the response to these ideas on the game within the game. And so Iztok, when you were talking there about picks being set higher up court, a lot of that, or some of it, can at least be attributed to the fact that pickup points are higher and people are experiencing ball pressure closer to half. And so one of the ways to try to alleviate and counter extensive ball pressure is to extend your screens, right? Another way to do that is to have spot-up shooters further beyond the three-point line. This goes back a long ways, but I remember when Darvin Ham was coaching the Lakers, there was a training camp period where he had the four-point line, which goes back to him coaching under Mike Budenholzer and how Budenholzer would often space Brook Lopez, for example, above a certain spot in order to allow driving lanes for Giannis and allow Chris Middleton more space to operate on the mid post, for example. I'd love to kick this idea to Pete as well. One of JJ Redick's opening comments when he was transitioning in to being a head coach and then also in the aftermath of his first season, Pete, he highlighted that he wanted the team to be in championship shape. And I think there is definitely a correlation between motor and peak physical condition and the ability to run and not get tired, both mentally and physically, allows you to push the boundaries farther. But that's not a complete overlap in terms of the Venn diagram, Pete. There is a natural inclination to play harder for longer. And to Iztok's point and some of the stuff that he sent us earlier, I think that the Lakers were pretty purposeful in trying to get players who were more naturally inclined to play harder for longer rather than just in reaction to what the other team is trying to present to you. And I've always been big on the idea of terms of engagement. And I think the Lakers are trying to be more intentional about setting the terms of engagement, both offensively and defensively. And I think that relates to motor.
I think all of this also plays into why the Lakers had an eye toward depth, in that you can say we want to play harder for longer, but I mean, don't we all? And that requires a certain amount of, you need more players, you need more bodies to be able to do that. I think it also explains, this trend does, a certain amount of the injury woes that the league has faced over the last few years, is they're pushing their limits more than ever, is talking. So seeing the Lakers really build out a team that can go 12 deep or so, and really the number, it's not just like having one really high quality, this is going to be the one of the best, you know, on ball defenders in the league, but having multiple players who can do this. And this is something that you touched on a little bit in our correspondence, but I'd love to see you elaborate on the idea of creating an overall effect with the players that you have rather than focusing on just one or two individuals.
Yeah, and the logical question when you look at these trends about motor leak, about ball pressure, about aggressiveness, speed, I think speed and playing fast or having fast players was one of the gaps, again, we saw last year with the Lakers. I think I often describe that team as more of a finesse team than aggressive, fast team. And then, as we saw this huge transformation that transpired over this summer, I think the logical question, of course, is did the Lakers address that? I think Rob Pelinka said it openly that they want to get younger and more athletic and fat. And I think can be a lot of things. I think in some, when we're talking block threats, players who can jump high, that's why I think they want Jonathan Kuminga so high. We saw this in the young guys, Adutero with Cameron Carr. But I don't think that the guys that they got are necessarily very athletic or in terms of very bouncy. But I think they got a lot of guys that are fast. So I think they brought a lot of speed for, especially when we go, I don't know, Colin Sexton is fast in any regard. But then if you take, for example, a player like Mamu, I think he's fast for his position that we'll play, especially if he's playing center, he can put the ball. Quinton Grimes is fast. Thybul, Zaire Williams, they're all fast. So this is something that I started to look, and this is then when I pass the ball back to you guys, was to me, I think sometimes as I watched the film of these new guys, especially for the player breakdowns, I thought, I don't know, Walker Kessler, he's a guy who runs the floor where he's a guy who has a high motor, who is active a lot of the time, especially if you compare him to a guy like DeAndre Ayton. I think Quinton Grimes is very fast and active player, similar with Colin Sexton. So my feeling is that the guys that they got are high motor players, but sometimes this is difficult also to then to confirm or to validate through numbers. I'll give you one example when we are talking about, let's say, ball pressure and how much teams increase the ball pressure, they need to look at the players. I think Zaire Williams was a guy who also, I saw this in film, of all the Lakers players, was a guy who was picking up full court the most. And I think he was always in these stats in top 10. But I think that was byproduct of how Brooklyn wanted to play. A lot of their guys are there. And Lakers, last two seasons, they were always either last or second to last behind Denver, for example, in ball pressure. So going back to your point, I think a lot of that was the team that JJ got. So to me, this will be very interesting. I think he said, if I'm not mistaken, prior to last offseason, that he wants Jared Vanderbilt, Wando, and Smart to pick up more, put more ball pressure on Mesut from Smart, but not from the Lakers as a team. So I'm really curious first, how do you guys see these new guys? Do you see them as a new high motor players, active players? And do you think that JJ will use this depth and will use this youth and athleticism to change the style of defense and how they play? Do you think we can expect them to be more aggressive team and pick up guys full court and provide pressure?
Why don't we go to break here, Pete, and when we come back, let's dive into that.
Dee, before you start, I wanted to jump in with the stat that Iztok sent us. One of the charts that he sent us that really stood out to me is the picking up full court and where the Lakers rank in that. And so this data goes back to the 2013-14 season, and league average was around 15 or so possessions per game where there was being pressure put on the bring-up ball handler, so the player bringing the ball up court. Last season, in the postseason, it was over 50 possessions per game, D, so more than tripled. And this is the one stat that most of the time these stats, and these are great charts that Iztok sent through because it distinguishes between regular season and playoffs. This happens even more over the course of the playoffs, but this is a massive difference than what the league was at 10, 12 years ago in terms of how they approach sort of just guarding right away, because this used to be seen as something that you're sort of compromising your defense. You're stretching them out too much. You pressure the ball, you get beat. Now it's a 5-on-4. That was sort of the old way of looking at things. It's gone in the totally opposite direction now.
I'm intrigued by all of these ideas of how the league evolves. Iztok also sent us a great chart about the uptick in offensive rebounding of late. And that idea, I think, stems back to the transition out of the Doc Rivers era of we're not going to chase offensive rebounds at all in order to set our half-court defense and be more stout. And then data coming in over the last 15 years or so to say, if you crash from these specific areas and you're able to do it this way, you're not going to compromise your defense. In fact, the trade-off is better for you. And so we've started to see more of an uptick now in offensive rebounding. But I wonder if you give the best offenses more time and more room to get the ball up court quickly, then they can turn half-court offensive possessions into a winning idea for them relative to what the normal success rate would be in a regular half-court offensive setting where you're playing up against the shot clock more.
This is something I always compare to American football, where if you give a great quarterback a clean pocket and time to throw the football, like, it doesn't matter how good your secondary is, and like, they're going to find whoever gets open. And Iztok, I think this is very much the basketball application of that. And so to your question of, did the Lakers improve at this? Do we see these guys the same way? I think it was very intentional that they sought to improve in this area and do it with a number of type of players. And as you pointed out, the Lakers were last at this in the NBA last year. And so Between that and then the real emphasis on two of the best offensive rebounders in the game, and Kessler and Looney. And I would even throw, I think Adu is supremely important in his development in this respect, in that what Darius was just saying about offensive rebounding and crashing from different areas, that's been a term that's really popped up over the last 3 to 5 years, is the corner crashing. That's really the spot that teams are doing this from, and having that supreme athlete or a guy like Kuminga, right, to do that too.
And I think that to what Darius said, I think it's also, one thing is strategy, and I think strategy could be, do we crash the glass, do we press full court? These are coaches' preferences, strategic decisions. But I think what Lakers need, regardless of strategy, is surround Luka and Austin with high-level active players. And this is what we saw with the Knicks, I think. where you have Brunson and Towns, who are all of more like of great offensive players, but never as a high active, high motor defenders or, I don't know, hustle players. But they surround them with the players who are filling the gaps. And this is what I saw, for example, from a guys like Thybul, like Xavier Williams, who may not necessarily be the best or the strongest on-ball stoppers, but I think they are very good gap defenders and they can cover ground and distance very fast. And I think this is, especially then when you have a Walker Kessler at the back, I think guys who can be fast, who can hustle a lot and cover distances that are getting longer with length, with speed, I think this is something that gets me excited when I think that this team can be better defensively than most people think.
This is the critical idea to me, the coordination between the types of perimeter defenders you have and the type of backline defenders that you have. One of the challenges I think that J.J. Redick has faced in both of his seasons is that in year one, when he had Anthony Davis, he did not necessarily have the ball pressure players who could then funnel and push towards AD. And what ended up being the case more often is they ended up switching in order to try to capitalize on AD's ability to contain on the perimeter while then having guys who were going to clean up on the backside, particularly with like LeBron and Rui and even Austin, who are sort of bigger players who could crash down and potentially help on the backboards. He was also doing a lot of veer switching and a lot of tactical solutions within a play in order to try to make up for what he did not have in terms of ball containment. After the AD trade, they lost all of their rim protection, essentially, and it was more smoke and mirrors, switch everything, let's play small, DFS, LeBron, Rui-based lineups where it's really just trying to contain the ball with everyone playing on a string. This past year, I think they wanted to do something a very specific way. They wanted to play their bigs up. They wanted to try to contain the ball at the point of attack. And what they found is neither Ayton nor Hayes were schematically able to lock in to do that possession after possession after possession. And I think JJ ultimately had to scrap his plan. And I remember, Pete, earlier in the year when the Lakers' defense was really floundering, they asked JJ, what's going on? And JJ said, we're maybe like the worst team in the league at containing the ball right now. Like, we can't stay in front of anyone. And so that makes it even harder when you don't have a classic rim protector behind you. I thought one of the things that the data that Iztok sent us and that Pete cited earlier, it reflects the idea of the Lakers being in a crouch too often defensively and being passive and being a team that needed to try to keep everyone in front of them and doing so ceded space over and over again. And with this roster, I think JJ is going to have more of an opportunity to say, can we press passing lanes? Can we funnel? Can we be more disruptive, particularly in the combination with guys like Thybul and Zaire funneling to a player like Kessler?
And I think if you remember, I think that's a great point there is when you said about JJ and about being more. Most of the time that I was watching Lakers last two seasons, the defense were more or less, I would call it a reactive defense. And last season, we saw it a couple of times. I remember in the middle of the season, in the Denver game when they're starting doubling Murray. And I think it was then, of course, against the KD. And there were some games with zone. I think in the middle of the season when they started to get a little bit more proactive. But I think Marcus Smart, to be honest, was probably the only guy who could try in this kind of season, this kind of a setup, having both, I think, the defensive versatility, IQ, and the physical tools to thrive in that kind of a system. I think Jared Vanderbilt is one as well, but he just didn't play enough. So I think now, with Kessler at the back, I think you can be much more proactive. You can be more aggressive on the ball. As I said, watching Zaire film, I think a lot of times what you see, she was very aggressive on ball, and he would get beaten. He would get beaten and player would drive. But sometimes they would score, depend on who the Nets play. They just weren't very good. But sometimes there was Flexton waiting and he would block the shot. And I think he's much worse rim protector than Walker Kessler. So I think that, again, I think gives them the different possibilities to play. I think you can, the zone lineup that they played with Drew Timmy, if I remember, now you have I think that was an idea next to Ayrton playing very big next to LeBron. But now I think you have a lot of different ways to play, either aggressively, defensively, or also you can go all speed or all offense on the other end. I don't know, when Luka sits or even with Luka. I remember in Dallas, that was for a long time. It was a huge discussion. Can Luka's team and Rick Carlisle's team, can they play fast? Because they were always last in pace, the most half-court teams. And then Rick went, of course, to Indiana and they became the fastest team in the league. And then Dallas last year, before so the season when Luka was traded, they basically transformed because they started training camp with Kyrie, with PJ Washington, with all these athletes around. They become, I think, the top 10 team in pace, which was really fascinating to see. So I think there is an idea of surrounding Luka with speed, with a lot of long guys who will run, who will hustle, who will be just high motor players. And I think this is the right recipe to build around.
Let's go to break and make one more point about the importance of bigs in this defensive style. And then let's talk more about that idea of what does motor look like on the offensive end? Because I think it's very easy to see it on the defensive end and apply that. But I think you're right on track with this, is talk about how this has an offensive application as well. So just one quick point on Kessler is that I think it's counterintuitive, but he might be the most important Lakers player of all in terms of the Lakers being able to tick up in terms of ball pressure. Because remember last year, the Lakers were first or right up there in terms of how often they switch as a function of all that you guys were talking about in terms of what Ayton and Jackson couldn't really do in that respect. And to be able to play more ball pressure, you need to be able to stay attached and not switch everything, right? They set a screen, you fight over the top of it. You are able to, you know, ride their hip and not let them get separation. If the offense knows that you're going to be switching everything, they're just going to come up and find your weakest defender in that respect. And you're not going to really be able to put pressure on the ball in that same way. Whereas if you're not switching, you can keep your best guys really putting pressure on their best offensive players. But you can't really do that without that backline defense. Despite, you know, we lost Marcus, who I would have loved to watch in this type of style, but in adding Tybull and Zaire Williams and even guys like Grimes and Sexton, there's a level of speed that you were speaking to earlier that I think is super important. But I think Kessler is the guy who makes it all work on that end. And then D, with respect to motor on the offensive end, that idea of being able to pick up the pace and grab and go, this is something that Mamo is very good at. Just what do you think about in terms of the application of motor on the offensive end?
Changing ends is super important, and it starts with changing ends quickly. I remember the decline of Anthony Davis from where he was in 2020 as an athlete changing ends versus where he was by the time that he got traded. He just went down consistently year after year. That didn't make him a bad player, but it limited more of the transition chances that the Lakers were getting, and AD was just a whole nother level. One of the things I think about when I talk about Kessler versus Ayton especially is that Kessler consistently changes ends really well, particularly for someone who is as active as he is on the defensive glass. And so for a player who is often fighting or contesting rebounds or grabbing rebounds, he's also then someone who is going to really get on his horse and try to run right to the front of the rim. I think this is a critical idea that helps both Luka and Austin. And I think we saw that more in their partnership with Jackson Hayes than I think they did with DeAndre Ayton. And this is one of the areas where I think the Lakers are going to miss Hayes more specifically. But Pete, when I think of offensive motor, it's not just racing the floor. Yes, I want guys to be able to sprint, fill deep corner, and really get up the court. But the idea that I wanted to kick to both of you guys in terms of offensive motor is, how quickly are you moving between plays? Like in the middle of the action, are you sprinting into screens? Are you coming off of screens hard? What is your decision-making process when you catch the ball? How quickly can you process and how quickly can you move on to something else? I think of offensive motor in ways where it's like, look how Luke Kennard played in terms of offense, and then look how he played on defense. And that's the difference to me between having offensive motor and defensive motor. Kennard's defensive motor was very low to me. He did not move very well. He did not try to mix it up very often. He was not often as a help defender, someone who was willing to put his nose right in the middle of the action. And he was never going to be a player who picked up full court or did any of the stuff that we were talking about earlier in the pod. But offensively, he was someone who would move around the floor with real pace and understanding of where to go and where to be and to keep the blender running. And that's the idea that I think the Lakers need more of offensively. And I'm interested to see how that translates with Grimes and Tybal. I know that Mamu has a lot of this, and so I'm very happy to have him a part of that. But this is where I want to see more from the Lakers. And honestly, I want to see more of it from Luka as well, because we talk about him on the ball, and I think he's got great on-ball offensive motor in terms of how he attacks and is willing to continuously pressure the defense. But off of the ball, I want to see them use him a little bit more, where he's coming off of screens and moving into actions with more verve and more force, because I do think that that will open things up for him and the entirety of the offense as well.
Yeah, just going back to Kessler and running the floor, I think this is one of the things that I saw first when watching his film. He was always, even when Yuda was down bad and he wouldn't get the ball, he was just running both teams. And second and third more efforts on defense, this is something that really stood out. So I think, and Luka is great at this, is finding big men when they run rim to rim. He will find and reward them. And I think this is something Kessler will really love playing with Luka. Then regarding the motor, I think there are different areas, and I think Sexton, to me, is very interesting player because he's such a high-speed player that thrives in early offense, not necessarily only in transition, but just attacking before the defense gets set, getting into the paint. And I think this is, again, one signal of a motor league is how much the drives, paint attack, paint touches are increasing. And this is like as a counter to aggressiveness. We see also how aggressive the offenses are. And here with the Lakers having three guys now, who I think are top 30 in driving paint touches in the NBA, I think this will do a lot of good. Now, how Luka can adapt his game, or how he can find the right balance between his methodic, let's say, very slow, deliberate half-court attack and then getting a pace, I think something is pushing, finding guys out court, and then also trying to move the ball and find the guys, like you said, gap, attend the gaps with drives, tracking the closeouts. And this, I think, is where guys like Grimes and Mamu, I think they try when they can not create the advantage, but when they can attack the advantage, when the advantage is already created and they can move fast. They can drive the ball past a little bit, score at the rim. And these, I think, are the two guys that when their decision making is a little bit simplified, I think they will be much better. And I think the Lakers can do that because they have Austin and Luka. So can they find guys to move and play fast and mix it all this up? I think this will be something really interesting. But I think they have, like you said, young athletic players. And I cannot even think about what happens when we bring the young guys.
So when we bring a dual car,
I think that should happen at some point during the season. Because I think if we saw one thing also again with Luka, it's not just the rim lob threat at center or the fast guy at center. I think it's also on the wings, the Derrick Jones Jr., the PJ Washington, they were catching lobs. And I think he also tries with some fast guys who can play fast and also move the ball. It was very short stint and this was like very niche player, but he was great in that he was very fast player moving the ball. It was Dante Exum in Dallas. I think he was a guy who was very willing to move the ball, but he would run up, he would, I don't know, do a nice dribble, find Luka, play it back, and they would play much faster with him. I think Luka was having most trail threes coming off Dante Exum passes. So I don't know if Colin Sexton is that player, but I think if you have a guy who can drive colleagues the play fast and then kick it out back, I think that that is something how you can also increase the pace and be more aggressive on offense and play with higher motor on offense.
One of the ways that I think you can win with offensive motor is in scramble situations. And that's something that I thought the Lakers, and this is all related to the lack of speed and all that, but I thought the Lakers were one of the worst teams in the league at that last year of, you know, 50-50 balls were often 25-75 balls in favor of the other team. But it's not just about like getting rebounds, but the place where scramble situations happen the most on the offensive end is off of offensive rebounds. And guys who, it's not even really about speed, D, it's about like mental processing of like Kevon Looney or Walker Kessler just grabbed this offensive board and everybody's heads are kind of turned. You're not locked in your shell the way that you are prior to the shot going up. It's one of the best opportunities that there are on the offensive end. And guys who can recognize that, oh, if I cut here hard here, I've got a dunk waiting for me if I do it. And this is related to kind of what Istok was saying about Dante Exum and just sort of that like collapse. And that's one of the best opportunities to get that. And so the Lakers already have a lot of the Luka can create offense, Austin can create offense against that set defense. But I thought they were terrible at really capitalizing on scramble situations in a way that I'm really excited about this year's team in that respect.
I was thinking about how offensive motor is accentuated by offensive IQ and quick decision making. And one of the things that needs to happen at the start of every play, and I think this has been the through line between both types of offenses that J.J. Redick has run, both the one where Anthony Davis was more in the hub versus what happened with the transition to a Luka-based offense and then a Luka in Austin, and then even with LeBron playing more of a tertiary role but still an off-ball threat, is that there is a need for advantage creation from your best player, and there's a constant reliance on that being the driver for how you want your offense to run. But Pete, you've talked consistently over the years about what happens in the middle of the play, and the Lakers have consistently had a great offensive engine in terms of an advantage creator, and they've had great finishers on the back end of that. But who's going to thrive in the middle of the play? And Talk's point, Grimes is good at this, Mamu is good at this, and I think that they're going to play critical roles in helping the middle part of the Lakers offense within a possession thrive and allow people to get easier and more open shots. I've said it for the year and a half that we've got to watch Luka play. No one can create an open shot for a teammate out of nothing with a single pass better in the entire league than Luka. Jokic is right there with him, but Luka's a player because of where he operates on the court. He can be 35 feet away from the basket above the break and throw a skip pass into the opposite deep corner. And it's just like, where in the hell did this pass even come from? And someone is shooting a wide open shot, or they've got a frantic closeout coming towards them. And then they do one head fake, take a dribble, and they're at the basket. And it's like,
easy
okay,
basketball.
Luka did this all on his own. But Luka doing it all on his own is not a recipe for championship-level offensive creation, possession after possession after possession. You need that player, but what you also need are all the guys who play in the middle part of a possession, and that is, to me, the zone where, like, motor and basketball IQ merge in order to allow you to continue that advantage and increase that advantage to make a finishing play super easy, Istok.
To me, if you go back to the Knicks example, I think Josh Farhat is a perfect example on that. So you have Jalen Brunson, who can play slow. Like Luka, he likes set attack, pick and roll, attacking his mismatch. But then you have Josh Farhat, who will just create offense just by, I don't know, 10 opportunities per game, hustling those ball down the floor, fast break, offensive rebounds. And I think this is the type of the guy, even Marcus Smart, I think he was that kind of a guy, but he's not as fast, so he cannot cover distances and speed. But I think here, guys, again, if you go back to speed, I think Thibault, even Zaire, I think guys Grimes, Sexton, I think having super fast guys who can create, like Pete said, in those ball situations, who can cover distance from one end to another very fast and create and score, I think this should be very exciting.
Can't wait. Thank you so much, Istok, for joining us and breaking all of this down. Before you go, I'd love to get your thoughts. Lakers just touched down in Slovenia and going to have this little Camp Luka over the next few days. What do you think about all this?
I think in general, I think it's great. I think it shows again that the transition to this being fully Luka's team, I think this is just another sign. I think Luka throughout not only Lakers, but also last year of Maverick's career, I think he started to doing this stuff more and more. Mini camps, team bonding events, things like that. So I think it's great. I think it also means a lot to him that he can prolong his stay in Slovenia and the guys come to him. I think it's going back. I think I mentioned this a couple of times on X or somewhere, I think Kyrie Irving was talking about last season, when the season they went to the finals. I remember season prior, there was a lot of talk about Luka and Kyrie, chemistry not working, can they play together, all this kind of stuff. And before the season, Mavericks had a trip to Abu Dhabi and in Madrid. And Kyrie said just having dinners, team bonding, this did wonders for their season. And that next season was really successful. And I think especially Luka and Kyrie bonded. I think their bond really was set then, and I think it still exists. I don't think, for example, Luka and Austin need that, because I think they are already perfectly set in that regard. But I think other guys like Kessler, I think just starting that chemistry, I think that is great. We will see. I hope they have a great time. I think this trip probably is going to be an experience. But just knowing a little bit also about Luka, I think I'm a huge empathy guy. So I think that's why I, for example, like JJ as a coach or Steve Kerr as a coach, because I think they have this empathy, they have the wit to understand a complex guy or a superstar like Luka. And if you want to play with a guy like him, which is, to be fair, not always easy, no superstar is probably always easy to play, I think it helps a lot to understand his background, where does he come from. I think this gives guys a much better perspective, and I think it could be huge team building chemistry-wise for the next season.
Totally agree. With so many new players on the team, this is a wonderful opportunity. Iztok, where can we find your work? Again, some of the most consistent high-level coverage of the Lakers. Where can people find it?
Yeah, it's on Digging Basketball Substack. And guys, I'll try to share these charts that we are talking about after our pod. So tomorrow morning, I'll try to have in there so people can see. And see also the charts about the stuff we were talking about. So yeah, Digging Basketball, the Substack is the place for all this stuff.
Pete, I know we're wrapping up. I just wanted to say that the Lakers lucked out. They traded for Luka Doncic, but they also traded for Iztok.
Right? We were talking about the Shannon Brown trade, right? Like, oh, we got Iztok too at this?
I was traded in the middle of the night, so.
We appreciate you, man. Can't wait to have you back on. Thank you for helping us parse all of this out. All right, we'll be back tomorrow, talk more hoops. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel for the winner. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal! Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One. Miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.